This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is an actor, producer, TV personality, radio host, businessman, and humanitarian who first captured our hearts at the tender age of 3 years old. His over-the-top cuteness, infectious giggle, and precocious personality made him an overnight sensation when he became the national spokesperson for the popular fast food chain Jack in the Box. He was one of the biggest child stars of the 70s and appeared on many iconic TV shows, including Laugh-In, The $6 Million Man, Marcus Welby, Police Story, and he had a co-starring role on the Saturday morning children's show, The Harlem Globetrotters Popcorn Machine. And when he guest starred on The Odd Couple, he was the one who first used the phrase, "You're fired." He also appeared in classic movies like Blazing Saddles and Oh God, Book 2. As a child, our guest had his own talking doll made by Mattel, and he was also a recording artist. In fact, his 1973 hit song, Take Life a Little Easier, recorded when he was only 5 years old, made him the youngest music artist in history to have a song on the Billboard charts, a record which still has not been surpassed. As an adult, our guest has appeared in movies like Checking the Gate, Dickie Roberts, former child star, Flowers in the Snow, and To the Top. And on TV, you've seen him in Parker Lewis, Can't Lose, How He Goes to Hollywood, and The Misadventures of Camp Elaine. He's also had a successful career in radio broadcasting. And beyond his show business career, our guest has had his own marketing firm, he's been a film production executive, and he has his own charitable foundation, the Rippey Foundation, which supports at-risk youth, seniors, and veterans. I'm delighted to welcome Rodney Allen Rippey to our show. Rodney, thank you so much for being here.
What a wonderful opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Brownstone.
I want to start by paying tribute to your dear parents who gave you a very solid, loving, stable childhood. And you've said many times that because of that upbringing, you were able to avoid the pitfalls that so many other former child actors fell into, correct?
Correct. You know, I grew up on the west side of Long Beach, California, in a middle-class family. You know, I had my brother, Kenneth Wayne, my sister, Beverly Lee, and it was just a very normal life. My dad worked for the city of Long Beach, and my mom was a housewife. So it was like we had the perfect combination. Mom took care of everything, took care of us, dad worked, and it just was a perfect, perfect home life.
Were you ever tempted to get involved in drugs at all?
No. Oh, my God, no. You know what? I have to tell you, sir, I never saw it work for anybody. It doesn't make you more beautiful, doesn't make you smarter, doesn't make you more free. There's no upside. And so me personally, I always felt like that's not fun. You know, me personally, I'm a type of person that I just don't like being out of control. And I never had any desire. Thank God I never had any desire that. And plus, I also was around good people. I was always around good people, and we had other things to do.
Your dear mom, who was such a vitally important person in your life in every way, passed away when you were a senior in high school. And you know, Rodney, that kind of traumatic loss would have derailed most kids, but not you. Where do you think you got the resilience to stay on track with your life?
I have to tell you, you know, my mom was so instrumental in my career, as well as with the rest of my family, because it was like a family deal. I wasn't the only one signed up. How it all began, it kind of started with me. I was sitting there watching the Little Rascals one day, and I kept laughing and laughing, and my mom comes in and says, "What's so funny?" And I said, I pointed the TV. And so she's like, "Oh, you're laughing at buckwheat." And I'm like, "Yeah, mom." And she goes, "What, you think you could do that? You think you could be on TV?" And I said, "Yeah, mom." And she goes, "Really? You wouldn't be afraid of the lights and the cameras?" I'm like, "Nope." So my mom goes to the Yellow Pages in 1972. And before you know it, through a little trial and error, she had my brother, Kenneth Wayne, my sister, Beverly Lee, and myself signed up with an agent. My sister was the first in the family to actually land a commercial. My brother, he went out for the famous Coca-Cola commercial. I like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. And I got the call for Jack in a Box. And so when I got involved in this whole thing, my mom just wanted to see her babies, me, my brother, and sister, just do something. And it was never a thing that there was any expectation. My mom just said, let's just see what happens. Well, I landed the Jack in a Box campaign and things took off. And so she, at a very early age, my mom told me, she said, Rodney, this is serious. A lot of people are counting on you. And I said, Mom, I'm just a little boy. And she's like, honey, you don't understand. This is so big. She goes, one day you will understand. So from that, I knew it was a business. And my mom, it wasn't that my mom was pushing. My mom was in the shadows behind the cameras, just letting me know, baby, I'm here. I could always see my mom. So it was never a thing that I was left alone to the industry. I was never left alone. And so, and my mom had told me at even a young boy, 3, 4, 5 years old, she says, Rodney, if I ever do get separated from you, tell them, take me back to my mother. She said, always say, get me back to my mother. Where's my mother? So, my mom, I was just like one of her little chickens. So, that was it. My mom never got caught up in the Hollywood spin. Neither I, my brother, sister, my dad, it wasn't about Hollywood. We were very normal people, middle class neighborhood, and we were real. And we always kept it real.
I know you've honored your dear mom's memory in so many ways, including by working with the American Cancer Society, right?
Yes, sir. I've always, sadly, in around late 79, my mom had said to my dad, hey, why don't we move to North Carolina? And that's where my mom was originally from. My dad was originally from Dayton, Ohio. And my dad was like, no, I don't think we need to move. And then a couple months later, she brought it up again. And my dad said, why all of a sudden do you want to move? And so mom was very witty. She said, well, the kids don't know their cousins and grandma and grandpa getting older. What do you think? And you could retire, Fred. And so my mom talked my dad into it. And so before you know it, poof, we had moved to North Carolina. That was in 1980. That was when the big drug boom started happening and things started falling apart in Hollywood. Whether I was here or not, I wouldn't have got involved in that. But what ended up happening was I was away. I was in North Carolina. So from 1980 to 1988, I was in North Carolina. I went to high school there, well, junior high and high school. And so, approximately 2 months before I graduated high school, well, let me back up. We moved to North Carolina in 1980, and around 82, mom says, sat me and my brother and sister down and says, Mama has a little cancer. And we were like, what? What is cancer? And so she started explaining. She says, oh, I just got to take a little medicine. My mom was such a trooper. She didn't want to, panic everybody. So things were fine there. It went into remission and sadly it came back. But we had that talk when it was at, towards the end. I was a senior in high school. My mom said, what are you going to do? And I said, Mom, I got to make sure you're okay. And from her hospital bed, she just looked at me. It was just me and her. And she said, you're going to be all right. She said, no matter what happens to me, you're going to be fine. And she says, you said you want to go to college. I said, right. She said, your money's already set aside. Your college is paid for. She said, just promise me one thing. You'll be a good boy and you'll go to California, go to college, and you won't get yourself into any trouble. That was the promise that I made. And I said, I won't. I will go. I will not get in, And so, 19 years old, I come back, I get in my 1968 Mustang. I tell my dad and family I'm going to college. I applied and went to Cal State Dominguez Hills here in Southern California. And at 19, I drove all the way across the country by myself. And I got here and I had to buckle down. I said, Rodney, nobody's going to drive you. Nobody's going to say, hey, you got to study and don't party too much. I said, ah. And I remember that conversation with my mom, and that's what kind of gave me the foundation to keep me together.
God bless that woman. Now, I want to go back. We all remember you so vividly from those Jack in the Box commercials. You had a 14-year run with that company. And from what I've learned in my research, Rodney,
There you go.
there you go.
There
I
you go.
believe you were the first Black spokesperson for any fast food chain. And because of your success, Bill Cosby was hired to be the spokesperson for Jell-O. Did you know that?
You know what? I have been approached by so many greats. I mean, I did a dance number with Sammy Davis Jr., and he says, you know, Rodney, I see myself in you. I was like, you're Sammy Davis Jr. You got to be kidding me. And I was a little boy at the time. I feel so honored that to be in that collection of great people. And I did, and some of these things I'm still finding out. And I believe I've heard that before. And the campaign for Jack in a Box was it, that's where it all got started. It spun into the doll with Mattel Toy, the greatest toy manufacturer in the world. Made my doll, and they also made the Flip Wilson doll and the JJ Jimmy Walker doll and all these other wonderful dolls at the time. And I was very blessed to have had that opportunity. Then the album, Take Life a Little Easier. And so, and just actually a couple years back, Sony Music just re-released my album because when you think about young people, there's no real age specific music for young kids. And so Sony just re-released my album worldwide. And so I encourage mothers and fathers and grandparents to pick up the song for their kids,
Well, the
grandkids.
thing about those Jack in the Box commercials that made them so special, in my opinion, is that they were so natural. You seemed very unscripted. Do you know what I mean?
Those commercials, actually, the very first commercial, if you go to YouTube and you type in Rodney Allen Rippey and you hit Jumbo Jack, that actually is my audition. That commercial became the first commercial. It was my audition and it went so perfect. They said, we can't do anything better than this. We're going to use the audition. So that's how it all began.
You know how rare that is?
Yeah.
Very,
Yeah.
very rare. Tell me, what are your memories of working with Mel Brooks on Blazing Saddles?
I remember a lot of laughter. Speaking of, you said Mel Brooks. There it is. There is the my wonderful memory being with Mel Brooks and Cleavon Little. And I played Cleavon Little as a little boy. And so seeing Gene Wilder and all of, and Harvey Korman and all those greats, I just remember the constant laughter, you know, because there was so much comedy. And Mel Brooks is such a genius. You know, and I'm so happy. I recently went to see him here in Los Angeles at the Peacock Theater. They did a night of Mel Brooks and they replayed Blazing Saddles in its entirety, totally remastered. It was a huge theater, and there had to be probably 5,000 people there to come to hear, to watch Blazing Saddles and to see Mel Brooks sit on the stage for an hour and speak, and it was amazing.
Well, in today's world of political correctness and wokeness, do you think a movie like Blazing Saddles could ever be made nowadays?
100%. I told Mel Brooks, I saw Mel at the Grammy Museum, and I took him to the side and I said, Mel, please do Blazing Saddles 2. And I wanted to play Black Bart. I would love to play the sheriff right now. And I told him, he goes, oh, Rodney, we could never do the film. I go, you can. Do you know this is my thinking? This is me as a, putting my little director hat on. If I were Mel Brooks, I would open up with a little video that says, hi, Mel Brooks. And behind you, you would see Young Frankenstein and the scroll of his historical life and comedy and movies, and say, hey, listen, now we're getting ready to do Blazing Saddles too. You can get up and go get a refund. If not, enjoy the movie. Everybody's been warned. You know what you're in for. And we need comedy. You know, that's one thing that we have to laugh again. We have to. And to get, you know, some of the stuff is true. It is true. Some comedy hurts. The mess is true. So you might as well laugh about it and try to figure out how you can kind of massage yourself and massage society so it isn't so true, but it is enough to laugh about.
I love your attitude. That's so refreshing. Now, you mentioned comedy. I want to tell you, when I was doing my research, I came across an interview with George Burns, who you appeared in Oh God, Book Two with. And he said that he had a long conversation with you, and he was so deeply touched that you knew who his wife, Gracie Allen, was, even though you were just a kid.
Right. Actually, we were on the taping of the movie Oh God, Book Two. We were at Venice High School. We were taping there. And for whatever reason, one of the main cameras died on the set. It just croaked. And they were like, we got a problem. They needed to go to Panavision, which is 2 hours away from where we were. So traffic. So while the whole production shut down, I remember me and the whole cast of young people, we were all sitting in the gymnasium, and I looked, and at the top of the grandstands was George Burns sitting there by himself. And I was like, I've never met George. I met Sammy, I met, you know, Mel, I met so many other greats and Johnny Carson. I said, I really want to meet Mel. So I quietly moved back one seat, and we were all joking and laughing. And I got up and I moved back another seat. Now I'm at the back row, and I got up and I tiptoed up the stairs. And I just wanted to tell George, I just wanted to meet him and shake his hand and go back down. And I said, I tiptoed up there and I said, Mr. Burns, I know you're a legend. I just wanted to meet you. I said, I'm Rodney Allen Rippey. And he says, I know who you are, kid. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. And I said, well, he goes, what do you know about me? And that's when I told him, I said, well, I know you love Gracie. And he's like, Gracie, you know about Gracie? And I said, yeah, I know that, you know, she was the love of your life. He said, sit down. And I sat there for a whole hour with George just sitting there. And he told me his whole life and how we met and how they were on the Chitlin' circuit together. And I just listened to him. And as he puffed away on his cigar, and I asked him, I said, do you really smoke those things? He goes, ah, oh, kid, I just puff on them.
I love that you made that old man feel so good that someone of your generation, you were just a kid, you knew who Gracie was. And then in 1976, you worked with Louis Gossett Jr. in an episode of Police Story. I had the honor of being chosen by Lou to conduct his very last in-depth interview before he passed away. I adored the man. He was a dear friend. What were your impressions of him?
Powerful. You know, he was a real actor. You know, I remember seeing him on TV. And when that episode came up and I had that opportunity to work with him, it's always incredible. You know, when you have an opportunity to see someone that you look up to, it was really incredible. But he was always solid and very positive, you know, positive, and he knew the business. He really did.
He sure did. Now, as a child, you appeared on many talk shows like Johnny Carson, Merv Griffin, Dinah Shore, Mike Douglas, and you always seemed so relaxed. Were you nervous?
You know, the funny thing about it was after I got going, I realized, and my mom, she just kind of guided me. She just says, enjoy yourself, have fun. She said, don't be silly because there's, you know, we don't have time for silliness, but let your personality shine. And everyone kind of as they came into these interviews, they didn't know what to expect. They didn't know what I was going to say. And it was really like they were holding their breath, but I always had fun with it because as a young child, I didn't see like, oh, I'm this star. As a young kid, I thought I got a lot of friends. And so when I would meet families and they would bring their kids and say, this is Rodney, I just felt like I had a lot of young friends. And so I really enjoyed it. I really did. There was nothing that I would do over again, just do more of it.
Well, you know, Johnny Carson was notorious for not liking to have kids on the show. How did he treat you?
You know what? Let me tell you the episode. If you could find it, it was historical. I was on the Johnny Carson show, and truthfully, that was my dad's favorite show. My dad was kind of laid back. He never really got involved. It was my mom that would take me to the auditions. But when we got the call that Johnny wanted me to go on, my dad goes, I'm going to this. I got to meet Johnny. And so, sure enough, dad came and he just loved The Tonight Show. He loved Johnny Carson. And so when we got on that night, when I was on with Johnny asked me, so what's your favorite thing to eat? And I said, spaghetti. And he was like, because he was expecting me to say hamburgers, but I really like spaghetti. And he died laughing. And so as we were talking, on his desk was a cup with brand new pencils in it. And I had proceeded to tell him, I was just talking about, I had met David Carradine. And I was taking karate classes from David Carradine's sensei. And he says, oh, so you know karate? And I said, yeah. So I took the pencil and I gave it to him and I held it out and he takes it and I karate chopped it. And the expression of, surprise on his face. And he gets another pencil out, and we keep the interview going. And every time he holds it up, I karate chop it. And he just throws them over. And he just thought that was the funniest thing. And so that was my experience with Johnny.
Yeah, I loved watching you on those talk shows. Now, in 1974, you and Ricky Siegel from the Partridge Family appeared on the very first American Music Awards show with Donny Osmond and Michael Jackson. In fact, Ricky Siegel was supposed to be a mini Donny Osmond, and you were the mini Michael Jackson. Whose idea was it to put you all together?
That actually was the genius of the great Dick Clark, because the night of the red carpet, as we're coming, and again, I remind you, this is the very first American Music Awards. Dick Clark himself was standing on the red carpet, thanking people and shaking their hand for coming to support him. So humble. And when I walked in with my mom, he goes, Rodney, you made it. Oh my goodness. And he goes, oh my God. You look like a miniature Michael Jackson. I'll be right back. He goes, come on in. And he takes off running. He went and told the production. Apparently, it was supposed to be Donnie and Michael read the nominee. And apparently, he had saw Ricky earlier, and Ricky looked like a miniature Donnie. So through the magic and professionalism of Dick Clark, he told the production, when Donnie and Michael go out, have them take Ricky and Rodney, and everybody will get it. And he put the nominee in my pocket. And so the only problem is I was too young to read, and so was Ricky. So I had the nominee. And when it came time for me to read the nominee, the word was the Carpenters. And I was like, what is this word? And so everyone was waiting, and there was this uncomfortable pause, and everyone died laughing. So that was how that went. And Dick Clark said that was his most favorite moment in the whole history of the American Music Awards. So I was honored to be a part of that.
It was a very special moment, and I understand that you became friends with Michael. He called you on the phone every Saturday morning for a long time. What did you talk about?
Michael would call me at 10 o'clock on the dot, and we would talk, and he would just say, hey, how was your week? How many autographs did you give? And he would give me like big brother coaching. He's like, always dress sharp. You never know who you're gonna meet. And I mean, coming from a superstar legend like that, I took his advice seriously. So You have to always be accommodating. He always says, ne and Michael told me this, never turn down an autograph. He goes, your fans are those who make you. He goes, always have time for your fans. And I was like, yeah, Michael, I'll do that. And all my life, I have always been open. I don't care where I'm at. If I'm at a restaurant, wherever I'm at, if someone remembers me and comes up, I appreciate that. And I will give them the time that they deserve.
I'm glad you never turned down this interview.
Oh, no, I'm honored with the host of other great. I feel great to be part of your wonderful category and just this catalog of great interviews that you've done. I'm honored.
Well, I'm honored, sir, to have you on the show. Now, when your song Take Life a Little Easier came out, you performed it everywhere, even in London, England. And I remember seeing you perform the song on American Bandstand. Were you actually singing, Rodney, or did they make you lip sync?
You know what? I actually sang because once they figured out that I could do this, a lot of times they would play a voice track, or actually not a voice track, they would just play the music and we would sing. I had a great time. I mean, that the promotion and the creative things. Matter of fact, all of the things that happened drove me to actually go into marketing and advertising. That's why I started my own marketing company. And so to see the real business behind the entertainment industry, that's what excited me.
Well, I want to mention to our viewers that Rodney's album, Take Life a Little Easier, is now available on streaming platforms like iTunes and Spotify, so kids can listen to those songs today. And Rodney, while we're on the subject of your singing career, my program director, Robert Monaghan, tells me that in the mid-70s, you sang the national anthem at an Oakland A's baseball game at the Oakland Coliseum. Do you remember that?
I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm telling you, I still love the Raiders. I am hoping, actually, I got a friend that works for the Raiders organization, and I would love 50 years later to come back and do the national anthem again at the Oakland Raiders new facility in Vegas. Man, that'd be a dream come true.
We got to manifest that.
Hey, let's go. Let's go. I believe it. I believe it.
Now, you appeared on so many TV shows as a child. Was there ever any talk of giving you your own show?
You know what? Well, that's kind of what the Harlem Globetrotters popcorn machine was. That was my Saturday morning special with the Harlem Globetrotters. And it was a great show. And right now, at this point, I'm still in the industry. I'm co-executive producer of the Country Soul Music Awards. Me and a colleague were looking at producing a music-driven show and honoring the soulful side of country. When you think of country music, when you think of country soul and you think of country, Ronnie Millsap, he is a country soul artist. You know, Wynonna Judd and Lionel Richie and so many people. You could go down, Ray Charles, Tina Turner, they actually were country soul. Tina Turner did, I think, two or three country albums. Ray Charles, his three biggest selling albums was the Modern Sounds of Rhythm and Blues 1, 2, and 3. Those were country soul.
You know, when we've had a lot of former child stars on our show, and they've all said that when they were approaching their adolescence, they began to worry that they might not get work as an adult because they weren't a cute little kid anymore. Did you worry about that as a kid?
No. You know what? I grew through the industry and over time, work shifts. And I mean, I worked, but by time I was 12, the last film I did was actually, well, the last film I did was with David Spade and Adam Sandler. That was Dickie Roberts. But I never felt the pressure of that because I always knew that I had other skills. I knew that I was going to develop other skills. It really wasn't just about acting. Do I love to act? Of course. Am I looking forward to acting opportunities? Of course I am. But I'm looking forward to also producing, directing, and I'm working with different colleagues. There are a couple of projects that I have on the burner, and I'm really, looking forward to what's next.
So when you see yourself on the screen now as a child, what goes through your mind?
You know what? That was a start. That was the foundation. But what it for me, it was an honor, because I've met people all my life, all nationalities, from people from coast to coast, even internationally. I've had people reach out to me. Matter of fact, I had a record store in the UK send me a copy of Take Life a Little Easier, a 45. And I'm like, wow, that was pretty amazing. I mean, I had great honors like this, the cover of Ebony magazine. Many people, this was a funny story. I can tell you a funny story about this because Ebony, as you know, is a staple within the African American community. And my dad was very low key. And my dad actually was a trash man for the city of Long Beach. So he worked for the sanitation department. Real funny story. And so when they did this story, my dad was like, hush, hush. He didn't even tell his friends at work. And many people picked up Ebony magazine. And when they started flipping through it, and I'm on the cover, they were like, Rodney Allen Rippey. And they were like, and they remember my dad's, at some point saying my name or my brother and sister's name. And they were like, Fred, you didn't tell us that Rodney was your son. And my dad was like, and so instantly he was thrust in the spotlight. And so he was like, oh man, they were like, what are you doing here working? He's like, look, that's Rodney's career. It has nothing to do with me. I'm not quitting my job. They were like, man, I would quit work. And I was like, my dad was like, no, I'm not quitting. And so my dad literally retired from the city of Long Beach because he loved his work. And so, my dad was a working man and just a provider. And God, how much I loved him, and sadly, on March 7th of this year, March 7th, 2025, Pop passed away. He was 91 years old. But he gave me everything that I need as a man. My mom gave me everything that I need to be adjusted to get through this life. So all I can say is, I love them both,
And they'll always, always be with you. I'm so sorry for your loss, Rodney.
Yeah, I understand. I have to say, I was at my pop's funeral, and I stood there and I tried not, I was thinking, I was like, man, this is going to be different. Pop is gone. But I saw the gravesite and I saw my mom's tombstone, and I said, Dad and Mom are back together again. And do you know that gave me such an overwhelming sense of peace? And I started thinking, I could imagine my mom, meeting him at the pearly gates and like, Fred, what took you so long? I don't know what you were holding out about. You should have came up here a long time ago. Come on, let me show you this. And my dad was like, wait, whoa. And I could imagine my mom taking him and showing him all the beautiful things that she probably has already taken in. So I'm okay with it.
And I can imagine them watching over and protecting and guiding you. I want to say, when I looked at your IMDb page, I saw that you're producing and co-starring in a movie called Bucks of America, which is about the African American regiment in the War of Independence. Can you tell us anything about that?
I was approached by a colleague here in Los Angeles, and yes, this is a historical story that has never been told. Do you know, people don't realize that in the Revolutionary War, when the British were there at Bunker Hill, when they came over the hill, the first faces that they saw was an African American regiment. And they literally froze. They literally froze and they didn't know what to do. They were like, wow. And they literally were froze. If it wasn't for that regiment that took the fight to the British, we could have lost. And a lot of people don't know. There's a gentleman here in Los Angeles that did the research. The British government literally contacted him when they seen this online, and they said, how did you find out about this? Nobody is supposed to know. How did you find out? And he said, just through research and started putting two and two together, he found out about the Bucks of America, that regiment. And so our American government literally honored them with their own flag, and they've been quiet about it, but a lot of people do not know about the Bucks of America.
This is a story that needs to be told, and I'm delighted that you're going to do it. And when it comes out, please come back on our show to promote it.
I would love to. And I'm supposed to be one of the militia men in the film. So fingers crossed. This is a historical film. Historical films normally have a big budget because it's costuming. It's a lot to go into a historical film. Hopefully we could get this film done, and it's going to be a blockbuster. So fingers crossed, and I definitely will come back to tell you about it.
Oh, thank you. Now, besides acting, you've hosted a radio show in Reno. You've been involved in Hidden Pioneers, a youth outreach program dealing with transportation technology. You created the Rippey Foundation. You've been involved in a lot of projects that inspire people to want to make a positive difference in the world. Where did that come from?
Well, I just know that through life, you know, starting out so early, like I said, 3.5 years old, I've met people, I've experienced life, I've traveled nationwide, internationally. It's obvious that we need each other and we need motivation. And so that's where I got involved with my friend through the Hidden Pioneers. I got involved with my own radio station. I have a radio station called KJBM Radio. And we just recently had a huge story because we're bringing back beautiful music to Southern California. And so this is all instrumental. We source music from all around the world, and we play the best in from orchestras, all instrumental, no vocals. And so it's an exciting time. I have to say that there's nothing that I could say that from the time that I got started, the people that I met, meeting wonderful people like you, it's a thing of being very thankful, literally being thankful.
I see the karma. You were a presenter at the very first American Music Award, and now you're bringing beautiful music to the world.
Yes. And I look forward to more things because I have my own projects. I'm working with a gentleman, and I'm really excited about this as a gentleman. And we've got a film called The Leather Mechanic. You didn't see this one, but The Leather Mechanic is about a guy by the name of David Vanderveer. We're looking at doing his life story. And David literally did all of the leather work. He was the fashion behind the music. So all the greats from Jimi Hendrix to Miles Davis to Chaka Khan and all these other greats. And I mean, Glenn Campbell. He actually did all of that really cool leather work. And so he had a way of touching all of these great artists. And so we're going to try to bring his life story to life.
Well, that sounds exciting too. I have to mention, in 2015, you ran for mayor of Compton. You had quite a vision for how you wanted to improve the quality of life in every aspect for the people of Compton. Would you ever consider going back into politics?
That's an option I have not ruled out. I've actually have had calls recently coming in and asked me to run again. People have said, we really need you. And I'm like, I started to think sometimes being in politics is tough because you have a lot that you can't do. But outside in business, I can affect change a lot of other ways. And so that was a very incredible opportunity. I have to tell you, you'll have to get my autobiography because I'm in the process of writing my autobiography. Part that'll be a chapter because something happened during that election that just didn't quite sit well with me. But I don't think that they were ready for the change, the positive change that I was going to bring because I had such ideas and I had shared it openly in my campaign, what I was planning to do. And I just don't think some of the people were ready for it because it was going to change the face of Compton in a positive way. And I might have been a little ahead of my time.
Well, I can't wait for the autobiography to come out because that's another reason to get you back here.
It would be my honor. Yeah.
Well, Rodney, I only have one more question for you, and it's this.
Yes, sir.
A number of years ago, you were on the cover of the Hollywood Weekly magazine, and the inscription said, "The best is yet to come."
Yes.
My question to you, sir, is, do you still feel that way?
I'm excited. You know, really, I'm excited about what's happening. And we're looking at the world. You know, we have a new president. We have a new administration. There are things happening that is, we have AI crushing in on us. And so it's exciting, you know. And I'm like, you know what? Either we got to get with the program and get ahead of it, or we'll be chasing it. So I'm very excited about things that are to come. I'm working on a project right now to get in contact with the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, because there are some things. I also am on the technology side. I have a technology for cities that could save them upwards of probably 40% on their heating and air conditioning bill, and it's not solar. So I'm very excited about some of the things I'm working on.
Well, I love that you still feel the best is yet to come, because I would imagine that when a person starts out their life as a child in such a big way, like you did, being an international star, working with the greatest legends, doing the most amazing things, it can be a challenge to make the rest of your life feel exciting and not like a bit of an anticlimax, don't you think?
It's beautiful because you never know what tomorrow holds. You know, I have people and I tell people, you know, I have friends and different people. And I was talking to a person. They said, well, I'm depressed. I said, why? Why are you depressed? This is the greatest time. You don't know what tomorrow holds for you. Think about the possibilities of your dreams coming true, you being able to leave a legacy. And so that's where I'm at, you know, and I have so many opportunities that come to me. I just got asked to be the vice president and public relations for Matrix Capital. These are things that we can go into communities and build bridges, literally build new opportunities for people in housing, education, financial literacy. I've got so many things. And again, my dear friend Bill Montgomery with the Hidden Pioneers, he's the cousin of the great Katherine Johnson, who helped us get to the moon. So working around these things, NASA, people, I really mean it. I didn't say that tongue in cheek. The best is yet to come.
Rodney, you inspire me so much. I'm so proud of the life you've lived and the way that you keep reinventing yourself. It's been such a pleasure meeting you and chatting about your amazing life and career. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate my agent there, Roger Paul. Man, I'm telling you, I appreciate it. Love you, man. Thank you for the connection. And I really wish you continued success, Harvey. Many more great interviews. And thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Rodney. You're welcome back anytime. Our guest has been the wonderful Rodney Allen Rippey. For more information about Mr. Rippey and the Rippey Foundation, please visit the official website, rodneyallenrippey.wixsite.com. You can also learn more about the Rippey Foundation on the Facebook page, which is now appearing on your screen. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producers, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Charalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.